sometime somewhere in between my tween years and my early teenage years, there was this transition in how books were sold in America. There's been another transition since then, and so many of the books that we get come from Amazon now. But what happened in that time in my late tweens or early teenage years is smaller bookstores like our beloved Valley Bookstore began to close, and larger kind of mega bookstores like Barnes and Noble began to open, and there would be like bookstores the size of a sporting goods store. I remember growing up, where I grew up in Houston, there was an old movie theater, the Alabama Theater, and it had closed, and the Alabama Theater reopened as a bookstore called Books, Inc., Books Incorporated. And I came from a reading family. We oftentimes went to the library or went to the smaller bookstores in our neighborhood when I was a child, when there would be a visiting author reading a children's book or a passage from one of their works. And my mom was a reader, and so my brother and I became readers too. And I remember early on in my introduction to Books Incorporated, this new mega bookstore, I was just enthralled with the size of this place and the number of volumes that were on the shelf. And I was always a very, like, spiritually inquisitive and somewhat emotional child. And it wasn't long before I discovered the self-help aisle at Books Incorporated. And I can remember spending a lot of time perusing the volumes on the self-help aisle of Books Incorporated, and that launched me into a lifetime of discovery of self-help or literature written toward the spiritual or social emotional development of the human being. What I can tell you from that journey is that I have read volumes and volumes and volumes of absolute garbage. And then from time to time, I've read a nugget of wisdom that an author has said something in a new way that has been said over and over again throughout the wisdom traditions that humanity has embraced since we began to gather in collectives or tribes. Now, I must admit, I'm 54 years old. I have two children. My older child is 23. My younger child is 19 today. Today is Jade's birthday. And so for the last couple of decades, my foray into self-help and social emotional literature, nonfiction, has been sort of in the like parenting section of that particular genre of writing, looking for that nugget which might turn me from a good dad into a great dad. Like, just knowing that someone had some wisdom out there. And what I have recognized is that there are two terms that have popped up within that particular genre, within a genre. The first gives way to the second, but the first term is a term that no doubt most of you, if not all of you, have heard. Have you heard the term helicopter parent? Yes, your laughter indicates that you know what I'm talking about. The description of the helicopter parent is that parent who hovers over their children, watching carefully, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, trying to make sure that the course or the path their child is on is the right one, that it's headed toward achievement and away from failure, towards success, avoiding disaster. And then over the course, as the helicopter parent has become more developed and maybe even like more overly developed, there's a new term that has popped up. Have you heard it? Snowplow parent. That parent who is just out in front of their children, 365, doing their very best to clear any obstacle, any blip, any struggle out of the way so that their child might flourish. Now, we know as parents that the work of the helicopter parent, and especially the work of the snowplow parent, is just folly, right? It's just folly. It's an absurdity that at some point, you know, maybe you're successful for a little while, but at some point, what, to use the words of Chinua Achebe or Pema Chodron, things fall apart. One of my favorite details of the Disney Pixar movies, Inside Out and Inside Out 2, do you know these movies? A wonderful tale about the emotional integrity of a young girl and then a teenage girl in Inside Out 2, and each of those emotions are embodied. The principal figure, the principal emotion figure in the story itself is joy. And one of my favorite details of joy, you'll remember this, maybe you recognize it, maybe you didn't, but Joy has blue hair. It's just like a beautiful recognition that joy and sadness are tied together, that there is no way to separate ourselves from struggle and failure and challenge. It's just a part of life. Now, this is a long introduction to a little bit of like transparency to this congregation. You who have heard me preach week in and week out know that typically I avoid, like the plague, passages like the one we have from Luke's gospel today. I am, to some degree, owning the fact that I am a snowplow preacher. These apocalyptic, gloom and doom texts that we have from the biblical narrative are the most dysfunctionally interpreted passages from the biblical narrative over the course of human history. It's like when the preacher stands up to preach about the apocalypse, he or she is almost always wrong. The genre of the literature itself has its roots in Jewish Hebrew culture. So apocalyptic literature comes from the Jewish tradition itself, and we Christians who inherit nearly everything from our Jewish brothers and sisters and siblings inherit this rich tradition of misinterpreting apocalyptic literature. It is challenging for us to see the goodness of the instrument of this type of literature itself. But it does serve a purpose. Its purpose is not to predict or interpret the future, but rather to describe a reality of the human condition. It narrates the fact that we as human beings, and particularly in times of uncertainty and disruption, we human beings can adopt an apocalyptic posture or context. And these writings are meant to narrate the very real experience that we can have as human beings, that all of us at one point in our life orient toward and find ourselves in, but are most wonderfully and beautifully described in the exaggerated, like, Jewish pessimism of Woody Allen. You know, just that nature of, like, I don't really know what is coming next, but whatever it is, it's going to be terrible. Jewish Christians aren't the only people of faith who have a version that narrates this reality. There is sort of an opposite side of the same coin in the Buddhist faith or the Buddhist tradition. It's called samsara, and where the apocalyptic orientation is pessimistic, samsara is so optimistic that it becomes Pollyanna, that it becomes toxic. It's this concept that we as human beings can become stuck in this cycle of, like, golly gee whiz, I can tell you, Ruth, that these times are tough, but you and I know that there's a day coming, it's probably January 2nd, 2025, when all of those struggles and trials will go away, and we will find ourselves on the threshold of smooth sailing all the way to the horizon. It is just as destructive in its optimistic form as the apocalyptic context is destructive for us in the pessimistic form, but nevertheless, it is descriptive of a place where we find ourselves as human beings. And in its description, we can find meaning there. So on this first Sunday of Advent, why does the church open Advent with this pessimistic, apocalyptic theme, describing us, putting us in a place where from time to time we find ourselves sitting quite naturally or quite honestly? And if I were to take, I would say even the lectionary does some snow plowing itself. This apocalyptic passage that we have from Luke's Jesus today is just a snippet of the rant that Jesus gives. And in there is this wonderful verse. It's a clue for us as people of faith of how we might emerge integrated rather than stuck in this apocalyptic cycle. Our passage starts in the 25th verse, but in the 19th verse, there's this curious line where it says, Jesus says, stand firm. This is right in the smack dab in the middle of this gloom and doom passage. He says, stand firm, and you will win at life. It's this curious line. It leads us as students of the Bible to do a little bit more discovery. And when we do, we encounter this eccentric word that comes from the Greek. This word, hypomone. And hypomone is a curious word. It has its origins in the Hebrew scriptures, and the word that we hear from the Hebrew scriptures is this word hesed. It's oftentimes used as a descriptor for God's love, and it gets translated into English as steadfast. So hypomone, to some degree, from time to time, in the English translations of the New Testament, gets translated as steadfast, but it also, in our own story today, gets translated in this sort of like active, like stand firm. It also gets translated as patience. It also gets translated as perseverance. It also gets translated as peace, but it's never passive. It's always active. So Jesus leads us to this place where we want to find ourselves emerging out of an apocalypse and into a place of strong resilience. If apocalyptic literature is pessimistic and negatively so, and samsara is optimistic but naive and Pollyanna, and I should say, like, I am so oversimplifying these very complex interreligious wisdom terms and concepts. But if we have that idea of pessimism that leads to negativity, that leads to a place of being stuck, or we have this attachment to an optimism that lends us toward to a Pollyanna life that leads us toward what we call in the self-help aisle toxic positivity these days, it is a description of mundane living. And this concept, hippomone, it speaks of this of what scholars describe as a realistic hopefulness. And I love this concept being an Advent concept. It speaks to integration. It is, I'll use another English word for it, but I have to give a little description before I drop the world on you, because this word is anathema to most people who are under the age of 50, especially like Western and American people. It really describes a state of contentment. And maybe if you're over the age of 50, you remember when you were like 25 and you heard one of your elders say, like, you know, I really just want to be content. You're like, oh, you're settling. Hippomone is something more than settling. It's a coming together. It's a realistic hopefulness and an integrated understanding of life is just life. And it grounds us in a place where joy and sorrow can live together, where failure and success meet each other in our lives day to day, and we just keep living. It is not settling. It's a beautiful, wise context in which we arrive if we are able to do the work of the disciple, the work of the mature, inquisitive, faithful person. Now, if you've been around this church for any length of time, you know that at the beginning of every new church season, we adopt a theme. And we are going to adopt the theme, and I'm going to give you the big reveal of that theme in a moment. And of course, I'm going to give you a token, a reminder, something to walk away that might call us out of our toxic apocalyptic negativity, our toxic Pollyanna positivity, and ground us in the present moment of realistic hopefulness. And though it would be very Episcopalian for me to use a Greek word for our Advent theme, because, you know, we are the frozen chosen, the elite of the mainline denominational thinkers, or at least we think we are. I just can't do it. Just can't do it. I remember I served you all, some of you know, I served All Saints Beverly Hills for 5 years of my life. A very wonderful, fancy Episcopal church. And I used to say all the time, like, I'm just a simple country preacher. Like, I don't know anything about your big city, fancy church ways, but I'm just here to love the people, you know, and really that was just like a persona, right? But now I am a simple country preacher. So here's the theme, and I'm going to give you two pieces of work. The theme that we're going to use throughout this season of Advent is just very simplistically, let there be peace on earth. Now, you may have noticed that we live in a time of great conflict and discord, where we are really struggling to meet one another, to connect with one another. Violence exists across the globe. As realistic, hopeful people, we know that violence will always exist, right? But we also, as people of faith, hope to be able to sow peace, to make peace on earth. And so I'm going to offer you two things. The first thing begins with the contemplative nature of the season of Advent. And I've been doing this for the last week as a bit of an experiment, just so I could tell you how it works. For the last 7 days, I've been beginning my day in a very particular way. And it took me a few days, honestly, to get it, to be able to arise each morning and to orient myself in the direction of peace. What I've been doing is I'm beginning each day with three beats. When I wake up in the morning and I open my eyes and I come to consciousness, I say, kind of like a three-beat meditation. The first beat, may there be peace on earth. Say it with me. May there be peace on earth. The second beat, may it begin with me. May it begin with me. The third beat, may it extend to all of creation. May it extend to all of creation. May there be peace on earth. May it begin with me. May it extend to all of creation. We know as rational beings that the trajectory that we take will be both a success and a failure. We might find, we might even cultivate to sow more peace in our own hearts, in the experience of our families, in our work, in our community, and we know that violence will continue to exist across the globe. But we will be oriented in the direction of realistic hopefulness, of peace on the threshold of all of creation. I would also tell you that for the next three Sundays, beginning at 9 o'clock, we're going to seek to embody the principles of peacemaking a little bit more deliberately. Brian and Mary and Travis and I will lead a class downstairs in the underground, and you're all welcome. Come if you want. Don't come if you don't want. It's not required. It's just, you're welcome there. It's almost required that you begin your day with the mantra, but it is not required that you attend the Sunday school class. But there we will look, and this is in partnership with a wonderful group that you might look up on the web called Telos. Telos is a peacemaking organization that had their beginnings in Israel-Palestine and has expanded to the American South, really looking at peacemaking and racial reconciliation within our own national context. And Telos has a lot of wonderful information about how we might embody peacemaking in our lives here on the ground. So we will try to make it practical for you on Sunday mornings at 9 for the next three Sundays. In order to remember this, we're going to give you a little token, a little keepsake here in this basket, and you can come grab one when you come up for communion or after church. There's just a little dove. You are invited to take one or two or however many you need to put them on your Christmas tree, to remind you every time you pass it, to put it on your rearview mirror and in the car if that's a place where you need to be reminded to be peaceful, to tape it to your medicine cabinet in the bathroom as you get up and greet each new day, to remind you that you are a peacemaker, a sower of peace, an embodiment of realistic hopefulness in the world. May there be peace on earth. May it begin with us. May it extend to all of creation.